Welcome, everybody, to a new episode of Calling It Podcast, recording Tuesday, March 3rd at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. As always, we are powered by CLNS Media. Our apologies for not getting an episode out last week. It was a busy week for Mr. Lebowitz. He made the trip down to Houston, where he is starting a new job, a new life. The show will go on, but we got a brand new Alex Lebowitz here. So, Lebowitz, how is the Lone Star State?
It's great. So just a little background. If you follow me on Twitter, you obviously know, but I'm now in Houston, Texas. I'm currently in my one bedroom apartment, which is way cheaper than anything you can find in Boston or New York. And I'm working at SB Nation Radio, producing their midday show Above It All with Candace Cooper and Tiffany Marshall, along with hosting my own weekly show and filling in from time to time. I'll plug next week. I'll be on the main event with Jake Asman, co-hosting Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, which I'm excited about. I recently left Lowell, left New England, and I'm starting the next chapter. I'm very excited for it.
Are you sick of Jake Asman yet?
Not yet. We'll get there. Ask me in 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, so again, check Lebowitz out on SB Nation Radio. We'll have you give the times again at the end of the show. But yeah, no, good. Like, congrats, man. And look, this whole thing, we've said from the beginning, you know, people ask me, why do I do this podcast? And I work at the sports hub. I was covering the Patriots. Like, why do we do this? And ultimately, we've both said, and I hope people enjoy it, and it is for people to enjoy, but it's also essentially a running demo tape for Lebowitz and I as we try to get into terrestrial radio. And clearly it's working, because in the last month, I went to the sports hub. You're now at SB Nation Radio. So thank you to everybody who's followed along. And it's nice to know, whether it's one person listening, 100, 1,000, that this has been worth it. So that's pretty damn cool. Congratulations,
man. Absolutely. And one of the best parts about this new gig is I'm still allowed to do this podcast, as are you with your 98.5 gig.
Right.
Which is awesome, which I'm definitely really excited about.
So, yeah, no, the show will go on, but just the J got a little bit bigger. The font, I don't know if we're capital J yet, but the font size got a little bigger. So there's that. So, all right. Let's actually start, Lebowitz, down in Houston. Well, it's in the Astros, actually. Are they in Arizona or are they in Florida? I guess they're right.
I think they're in Arizona.
All right. So yeah. Arizona, but Houston team. We're going to start there. Houston Astros. We haven't really done a show since spring training games began, and this is something I really want to talk about. We've touched on the Astros scandal and the Red Sox scandal plenty. That's not completely the road we're going to go down. I want to talk to you about all these guys getting beaned and booed and everything, and what you've thought of the response has been so far from these other teams. Because I've got to tell you, the Red Sox are not going to be worth watching this year. We'll get to that in a little bit. But I may watch – the Astros may be must-watch baseball this year just to see all these guys get booed and hit with pitches. It's been fantastic so far.
Despite the scandal being exposed and them having to deal with all this punishment, you know, I'm looking to take the over for wins this season for the Astros, because they are enemy number one, and whenever you have a situation like that, it's a rallying point. So we might see that this year with the Astros, if spring training is any indication of how teams will play them. But yeah, it's been crazy to watch, and I think it's going to keep this storyline alive.
Well, yeah, and they're going to have a lot of free base runners too this year. You can't forget about
that.
Go ahead.
Their OBP is going to be through the roof. It's going to be great.
Did you see the clip yesterday of Trevor Bauer now with the Reds just tipping pitches on the mound? He's tipping his own pitches on the mound. He's using the warm-up pitch signs. You know, you flip the glove up, flip the glove down, whatever it is, say fastball, change up. He's just letting the pitchers know what he's throwing. And he said that, you know, he doesn't want there to be any confusion about what's going on. If he puts up his numbers, he puts them up. They're earned. And I love like that. I want more of that. We've kind of been waiting for baseball to have this edge, right? This game within the game, the gamesmanship mentality, right? Where these guys aren't just robots. And this is bringing that out, I think, more than anything has in a long time. More than anything since steroids. These games are being played with emotion now, and they're being played with genuine hate. And I've said this before on the show, I'll say it again. Sports are at their best when the two sides competing, whether it's individuals or teams, hate each other. When there's genuine disdain between the two sides, that's when sports are at their best. And everybody playing the Astros this year is going to hate them. that's the reality of it. It's going to make it fun. The other thing I'll tack on top of that that I thought of earlier today is when Mike fires pitches this year, how much are guys going to be bat flipping him and chirping him from the plate? Because we've learned that there's some people who have trouble with Mike fires too. So
oh, yeah.
I just love the genuine hatred that's going to permeate the MLB this year. I think it's a long time coming, and it's actually going to help the sport. And don't. I know there's probably people thinking, oh, we should love, not hate. Nah, that's not what competition's about. A little bit of hate is good, okay? If everybody loved each other, there'd be no motivation to do anything. Especially in sports, hate is a good thing.
Yeah, again, I mean, the one positive to the scandal is it created talking points. People were discussing the sport of baseball, the MLB, during the offseason in the middle of the playoffs, the NFL playoffs. That's never happened before. And so are scandals like this good? No. Is it quote-unquote good publicity? No. But it's drama. And drama's fun. It's entertaining. And we've all been talking about the angle of like, oh, how is it going to be facing the Astros? How many guys are going to get hit? We've seen it a lot so far this spring training. But you brought up something that I think is not talked about nearly enough. And that's Mike Fiers and how his reputation may have taken a hit. We heard what David Ortiz said about him, calling him essentially a rat. There's a lot of guys in the league, both pitchers and hitters, who think that way. And who look at Mike Fiers as a little bit of a coward, and especially on that Houston Astros team. Then you have, you know, Kent Giles coming out saying, oh, I'm going to give my World Series ring back. Shut up. It's a lot of indignation from people who I think are trying to play up this story a little bit for their own personal benefit. And it's annoying. But again, it's interesting. And I really can't stop watching.
Yeah, it's the one thing that's a shame is Mike Fiers isn't in the NL. And those games are going to be interesting.
Absolutely. And he would absolutely get beaned by one or two guys. Or maybe not. Because I think with something like that, you don't want to be the guy who speaks up and says that you're against what he did. David Ortiz is a retired ball player, future Hall of Famer. So I think there's a different standard. But if you're in the MLB right now, you do not want to be that guy who comes out and speaks out against what Mike Fiers did, being a whistleblower. And again, say what you want about him. I do think he's a little bit of a rat. But at least he's, you know, somewhat consistent. Like, again, you go back to Justin Verlander and how he had spoken out against sign stealing a few years ago. And then he joins a team that was conducting the most sophisticated sign stealing scheme ever and didn't say a word. It's just a very interesting storyline. It's not going to go away anytime soon. And it digs deep at a problem with the MLB and kind of where that line is blurred between gamesmanship and cheating. And the reason I say that is again, there isn't a consensus in the MLB, I feel like, amongst players, at least privately, as to whether or not exposing this was a good thing, whether it was fair or not. And I think that it's a way more complicated issue than is being led on.
And it will, yeah, it's going to permeate the league throughout the year. I mean, this is not going anywhere anytime soon. All right, let's get to the local story here with the Red Sox and Chris Sale. He threw live bullpen for the first time on Sunday. Said he was feeling great, or the pitching coach said he was feeling great. Now, here we are, Chris Sale's elbow was sore. He has to get Tommy John. I'm trying to read the details to make sure I'm right. 2 days ago, Chris Sale threw live batting practice, Red Sox minor leaguers. He threw 18 pitches. He's supposed to throw 15. He threw 18. Pitching coach told reporters Sale felt fine. Not sure how the pitching coach knows that, but Sale told him whatever. 2 days later, Sale's elbow was sore. He has to get an MRI. MRI goes to Dr. James Andrews, which means Tommy John is seriously on the table. Now, let me say this, because I got ripped on Twitter for saying this earlier today. This is mismanagement by the Red Sox. This is. Same thing the Yankees did with Severino. So this is not me being a homer or anything. The Yankees screwed up. The Red Sox screwed up. Chris Sale's elbow hurt at the end of last year. He didn't get Tommy John. He then comes back. There's that pneumonia thing, whatever. They had plenty of time to assess the status of his elbow, get a preemptive MRI, figure out what you're dealing with. He didn't hurt it throwing 18 pitches on Sunday. This was an issue, And because he didn't get the surgery back in August, and the same thing with the Yankees and Luis Severino, because they didn't get the surgery back in August, now for Severino definitely and Sale maybe, they won't just miss 2020. They'll probably miss a good chunk, if not all, of 2021. And you see this trend in baseball where these teams are hesitant to put their superstar pitchers under the knife. And I get why, but elbow soreness can't be solved by waiting for 11 o'clock and wishing it to go away. You have to be preactive with this stuff. And, you know, Tony Mazur at the column for 98.5, and this was his opening thought. I don't want to steal it, but he's right. How many bad decisions and how much gross mismanagement can one organization take part in over an 18-month span? It's unbelievable. They have three healthy starting pitchers right now. They certainly don't have enough MLB arms in the bullpen to use two openers every 5 days. This whole thing is a mess. You know, the Red Sox over-under on wins, I think they started out after the World Series about 89. I really hope you took the under, because I'm wondering at this point if they're going to reach 80. I really am. This is a mess.
It's not looking good. And Chris Sale, as we very well know, is a guy who has been able to last an entire season. 2018 was a complete anomaly. And even then, he just kind of got hot at the right time and was useful out of the bullpen. And he's running on fumes. I don't understand how you have a guy who continuously is dealing with elbow problems, with arm problems, who weighs a buck 25 at 6'5", and you don't think, you know, maybe we should try to be proactive with this thing. He's going to come in this season, and inevitably, he's going to get hurt. It's happened throughout his career. You look at his August and September numbers. You look at the last 30 starts he's had with the Red Sox. It's abysmal. It's awful. And the Red Sox ownership or front office or baseball operations people, whatever you want to call them, they, I guess, think that somehow he's just going to get better. It's just going to go away. And you know, he will have a complete season at the age of, what, 31? It's not happening. So I feel like you're going to have to take that step, that surgery, Tommy John step at some point, and do something about it, or this is just going to be a perpetual process. And that $150 million contract that he signed, which at the time didn't seem like a horrendous deal, is, you know, going to be a complete failure and is kind of a microcosm for the reason they you know, had to blow it all up and trade Mookie Betts. It's brutal. And it all comes back to that. It's just poor management and looking at a guy who, you know, clearly should be treated one way, but they are refusing to acknowledge that. And I don't know how you can be a Red Sox man and just not be frustrated with this process. You said the over-under is 89. You know, I think they get around 80 wins, but they're definitely not going to fight for a wild card spot. And this season is clearly going to be a wash. And we can say that, you know, already on, what, March 3rd. It's brutal.
So let's recap real quick here. Just going back to, I can't remember the exact date. It was in November. Okay. Story comes out. One of the Red Sox clubhouse officials was, you know, the Red Sox didn't know this, and it was before they'd hired him, but was sexually assaulting children. So that story comes out. Red Sox quick to sweep it under the rug. A day later, you have the first murmurs that Mookie Betts is going to get traded. You then have the Red Sox getting caught up in the ad. It got quiet for about a month there. The Red Sox get caught up in the Astros cheating scandal. They fire Alex Cora. Unknown who the manager is. Mookie Betts then is actually traded. They then go to camp again without a manager. They hire Ron Renneke. They make him an interim. Now you have this issue with Chris Sale. Throw in all the other minute things that have happened here or there that have just been a mess. I mean, this has been, let's call it a teardown of a season. That's what it is. This is a teardown of a season. And this team, again, is 18 months removed from 119 wins between the regular season and playoffs and a World Series championship. This is what Dave Dombrowski was. This is, and I'll say this, as disappointing as this all is, I can't say I'm surprised. The extent of it is a bit breathtaking. Mm-hmm. But you knew when you hired Dave Dombrowski, this is what he had done every stop he went. He sells everything for elite pieces that aren't sustainable, Chris Sale's, right, with that throwing motion. And then he leaves the organization in disarray. This is always how this was going to end. Now, you didn't know Alex Cora was going to get fired, the cheating scandal, something else. But this is – the Red Sox signed a deal with the devil when they hired Dave Dombrowski. And now you're seeing the back end of it. Now you are seeing the other side of the coin. So is this worth the 2018 World Series championship? That is what Red Sox fans need to ask themselves.
And the most
keeping
frustrating...
keeping in mind we're not done yet.
Yes.
I think it's only going to get worse before it gets better.
Oh, 100%. I think the thing that's most frustrating is, yes, they won the 2018 World Series. They didn't have to re-sign Nate Eovaldi for what they did, a guy who was also injury prone. They didn't need to re-sign Chris Sale to the contract that he has, which is kind of, you know, pigeonholed them. And now they have to trade away the centerpiece. It's brutal. And I'll give them credit. The Xander Bogaerts signing was as good as it gets. They got great value for that talent, especially given what he gave you last season. He's an elite shortstop, an all-star caliber guy. But Dombrowski didn't need to make those moves after the World Series. The World Series could have been won, and they still could have been in a position where they had somewhat of their core. Maybe not Chris Sale, but you would have still had Mookie Betts. You would have still had, obviously, Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers, and you still have most of those guys. But overall, I think one of the most frustrating parts is there was unnecessary action taken after they had accomplished what they set out to accomplish. And, it was completely needless. And for me, it all goes back to that. It's like, well, you know that in a couple of years, you have key pieces who you want to keep long term, who are in their mid-20s, who are entering their prime, who are already, you know, on their way to be potentially Hall of Fame caliber players who are marketable. But instead, they want to sign Chris Sale to a contract that probably was not warranted. Or maybe it was warranted, but was not smart to make. It's frustrating. My question is, you know, from a fan perspective, are we in that 2012 category? Are we like end of 2011 with Tito getting fired, bringing in Bobby Valentine, and it's just a complete disaster? Because to me, that's the feeling I have right now. I feel like this is the worst period the Red Sox have had, definitely the worst 4, 5, 6 month stretch they've had since back then, and since really John Henry and company bought the team.
We'll see. That one sort of came out of nowhere. Like I said, I think this is predictable, but in terms of just pulling teeth, yeah, this is pretty bad. And the cycle's going to continue. In order to borrow another thought from Tony Maserati here real quick, and I don't mean to just keep quoting him, but I think he nailed this. So going into 2021, you don't have David Price. Eduardo Rodriguez might be gone, right? His contract's up. And remember, they took him to arbitration over less than $1 million. So I don't know how eager he is to come back. Chris Sale could be out with Tommy John. So this team may look at it and say, well, we need a starting pitcher. We reset the luxury tax so we can go over it again. And they're going to give another fat contract to a pitcher who doesn't deserve it, and the cycle's going to continue. Again, this all goes back to John Lester. All they had to do was pay John Lester what he wanted, what was fair. The deal he wanted was fair. All they had to do was pay John Lester, and instead, here we are. All right, I want to leave plenty of time for final thoughts because we do have a lot to get into. I'm going to start with my quick nerdy take, Lebowitz, and then we'll get into the fun stuff. This is for all the hardcore draft Knicks football people. So the last 3 years, in 2017, the NFL started allowing teams to trade the compensatory draft picks. Those are the picks at the end of the third through seventh round the teams get based on free agents leaving. Again, in 2017, the league started allowing teams to trade those picks. Since then, the compensatory picks, which are announced by the league, you don't know. There's a formula. The league doesn't publish the formula. It's kind of figured out, but not really. So you have an idea of what teams are looking at. But the league announces those draft picks 62 days before the draft. It's been the last 3 years it's been done that way. This year, we are 51 days to the draft. They still have not been announced. There has not been any announcement about the delay. And it's crucial, especially for the Patriots this year. They're looking to pick up two extra third-round picks on top of the third they already have. That would leave them with 3 third-round picks. They don't have a second. So I think they're going to want to move in that range, try to move back up into the second round. Not knowing what picks you have makes it tough to plan. So it's just annoying to me that they're not out. And it is something that bears worth watching, because once those picks do come out, expect to hear rumors about the Patriots trying to move back up into the second round. They just need those picks to do so. I don't know if you have a thought on that or not. It's just sort of a nerdy thing I've been thinking about the last couple of days, and then we'll get to the fun stuff.
I think, you know, just like the NFL has their algorithm for how to you know, delve out those compensatory picks, rather. Belichick has his own value method, right? When he's looking at certain positions in the draft where he can move up and, you know, this pick is equal to the value of these two picks or over the value of the. So I think regardless, Belichick will and the Patriots will be fine when it comes to that. They don't need a lot of time to execute these trades because a lot of the time they do it on draft day.
Right, but that formula itself, that makes it tougher because even if you're trying to plan, you know, are we going to pick 65 or are we going to pick 71? Like that third round pick can be in a range.
That's true. So
that's why, true. You know, it makes it a little – you can, but you also can't start planning that stuff because you don't know what other picks teams are going to have too. A team may have a guy that they lost that's a borderline third or fourth round. So you say, okay, if this team gets a third round comp pick, they're probably not going to want to trade. But if that guy ends up being worth a fourth, then yeah, they're going to be open for business. So yeah, again, you can kind of have an idea. And a lot of this stuff does happen at the draft, but it's planned out for months ahead of time. And this delay just means you can't plan. So on top of the CBA, you can't plan for free agents. The compensatory picks make it hard to plan what you're going to do rounds 3 through 7. Or I guess 4 through 7 because they come at the end of the third round. It's just annoying to me. And I want to do my full mock draft. I want to do my seven round mock draft. I can't do it until the picks are out. So
this is still an advantage for the Patriots though, no? Because it's
a disadvantage for a team that's so because some teams I think may look at it and say, we know we're getting a third round pick. We don't care where it is. A team as detail focused as the Patriots, the more information they have, the better job they're going to do. Right now, they don't have the information they would normally have at this stage of the process. They would have gotten that information 11 days ago. So what would they have done in the last 11 days that they have not been able to do? I'm not saying it's a major disadvantage. I don't think it's a major advantage the other way. Again, I get caught up in the minutia, especially when it comes to team building and things like the draft. So this is where my head's been at.
Yeah, that's why you're the best in Pat's coverage. I love it. I think that it does come across as a minute thing, but when you're talking about, as you said, a team that's as detail oriented as the Patriots, these are things that Bill Belichick is asking. This is the exact thing that he's probably angry about. Like he's probably sitting there being like, why the hell haven't they come out with these?
No, picks? And I bet he actually is. So I'm getting ready to write this for the Sports Hub. I bet he's in his office. He's checking his email every morning, right? We've all been there waiting on an important email, just refreshing, refreshing, waiting on the com picks, and he hasn't gotten it. It's probably killing him.
It's got to be. Hopefully they don't come out with them before your article is published. Knock on wood.
All right. Speaking about...
Not to jinx you. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Speaking about things killing people, we have to talk about the coronavirus.
Of course.
You recently... I'm guessing you flew to Houston. Did you fly to Houston or did you drive?
I did. I flew.
All right. How was that?
It was fun. You know what? I saw a ton of people in the airport with surgeon masks and gloves. And I just thinking, what idiots buying into the hysteria.
I would have freaked out. I'm a germaphobe. I would have freaked. Like I am taking the green line later. I am not happy about ever taking the green line. It sucks. But especially now, like I might wear gloves. It's 70 degrees here. I might wear gloves.
Yeah. Don't do that. It's not where you can get the coronavirus and odds are you'll be completely fine. Even if you do contract it, the people will freak out, but all this is hysteria from the media. It's another example of why the 24-hour news cycle is so detrimental to our country. The coronavirus is bad. It's not great. More people have died this year from the flu than the coronavirus. More people die from homelessness than the coronavirus. More people die from heart disease than the coronavirus. Like, there are so many other things that kill you more so than this does. And people want to act like this should be our health priority. I don't care at all about it. Bring it on, Corona. What's funny? You know, I don't want Corona. I'll take that back. But I'll say this. I think that there are a lot of idiots out there and like people who aren't buying Corona the beer. because of the coronavirus.
Those numbers were screwed with, though. That was it. It wasn't actually 38%. If you go, it was 4%. 38% of Americans won't drink Corona beer. Before this, just wouldn't drink Corona beer.
And it's a decent beer.
I like Corona. I had one the other night, honestly. I did.
Yeah.
And I normally don't drink it in the winter, but all the talk about it. No, but it was 4%, which is still probably – the number's way too high, but 4% won't drink it because of this.
Yeah, and that's just hysteria. It's hysteria. Right. Yeah.
Well, then there was also there was a clip going viral the other day of a news report with, can you get the coronavirus by eating Chinese food?
Oh my god!
You can get
that person get fired.
Like, you can catch a lot eating Chinese food if you get it from the wrong place. But you're just as likely to get coronavirus as anything else.
Yeah, you get maybe food poisoning depending on where it's from.
See, the thing I keep thinking of, remember Swine 09?
Oh, yeah. Swine flu.
That was a huge thing. Did anybody actually get that?
That was another China thing, I believe. That was big in China.
Oh, they're all in China.
And the bird flu. There's always these sort of things coming up. I will say this. We are due for a plague. And what's going to happen is there is going to be
Hang on. Did you see the thing that the two biggest plagues in modern history were 1820 and 1920.
Ooh.
So we are like legitimate. When you say that, we're legitimately due.
We are, but I don't think that's the thing. Because in 1820, they probably tried to treat the plague with leeches
was 1820? I think that was yellow fever.
I'm not, I'll be honest, I'm not well versed on my plagues.
I'm putting it in the Google machine.
But there will be something one of these days that comes around that's going to like kill millions because it's like an antibiotic resistant.
1820 yellow fever.
Yellow fever. When was the bubonic plague? That was long ago, right?
I think that is yellow fever, isn't it?
Is that the yellow fever? So that and a lot of this stems from rats too. That's another thing. Like the coronavirus is from what, bats or snakes? One of those two.
Bats.
Bats. Bat soup, right? And then the bubonic plague was from rats. And I don't think the rhyme I think that's just coincidence. But like there is a problem with some of these animals that maybe just need to be exterminated. Who knows? And
maybe
I know that
let's not eat bats. I can't imagine they're very appetizing. There's no meat.
I mean,
how do you eat a bat?
You cook it. Maybe you put it on a skewer. You put it on a spigot.
There's no meat in a bat. What are you putting on the skewer?
Well, I mean, people eat quail. At first glance, there's no meat on quail either.
Fair. Dude, 575,000 people died from swine flu worldwide, not in the U.S. Worldwide. But still, I thought that was a joke. I remember like them saying like nobody got it. It was just spreading because swine flu sounded funny.
Well, that's a lot of these. Like Ebola was huge in third world countries and in Africa. It wasn't as big of an issue in the United States. I think the thing that freaks people out about the coronavirus is it's pretty widespread. It's in a lot of developed countries. And thousands of people have died so far, I think. Maybe it's hundreds. I don't even know.
12,000 people died from the swine flu in the U.S.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
59 million Americans contracted it? That's unreal. Only 200,000 were hospitalized. I did not realize swine flu was that big of a deal. I thought it was – because I remember, like, people wearing shirts. I survived swine 09. I wouldn't think you'd be making jokes about something that killed that many people.
Well, let's hang on.
As I sit here and do it.
Let's do the math. So you're saying – 12,000 people died from it, and then there's 56 million that had it. That's such a small percentage. That's such a small fatality rate.
It's telling me 12,000 people died, but it's also telling me 500 people died.
All right. This is the problem with the internet.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, there were two waves. Okay, no, I get it. 500 died in the first wave. There was a wave over the summer. And then it came like in like the early summer, and then it came back.
You know, another thing that's pretty neat is it's not neat. It's horrible. It's terrifying. But with, global warming and I don't want to get into the politics of that. But there are, glaciers melting, and you go up north in Russia. There's a lot of melting, whatnot. And in these ice caps are, carcasses and the remains of old animals.
I've seen that.
And people fear that with the melting of these ice caps, it will release old viruses that will sweep through areas if humans ever come into contact with it. And we don't know how to deal. Like, it could be the deadliest stuff ever.
Well, it's so like that's that, something that Futurama episode. Have you seen that? Where Fry gets a cold and they eradicated the cold through vaccines, so nobody had a natural immunity to it. And then everybody like the cold becomes this major problem because nobody had it in 1,000 years.
Wow.
So it's actually one of the better episodes. So no, that's a Futurama episode.
That's a good concept. And this will be like, but we have like, this will be like probably worse than the cold. And you know, I maybe that's going to be beyond our lifetime, but at some point
at this rate, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows?
All right. Did you see the thing too, that there's an asteroid that's coming to hit the Earth in April? Like,
yeah. What is it? 93 million miles is going to be off.
That's not a lot in space though.
It's a lot in my mind.
That's like basically the distance between here and the moon, or it's 16 times the distance between here and the moon. But that's like, I don't know. Look, Tom Brady's contract expires March 18th. He'll probably decide soon after that. If beginning of April an asteroid slams into Earth, Brady's no longer a Patriot. Who cares, right? Like, this, I just feel like every day I wake up and there's something else. Whether it's this flu or the asteroid or some with the election or another country or whatever. It's just, right?
On a macro scale.
Always like this? Where every day there was another update about something new that's going to kill us?
I know that every generation has this. Like in the 1980s, you know, they had, I don't know what lecture, they you know, discovered CDs. They went from vinyl to CDs, and they're probably like, I don't know how you can beat this. How can you get above a CD technologically? Now we have iTunes and Spotify and a bunch of other stuff, podcasts. Like today we're saying the same thing. Like, how do you go from where we're at right now, and not just technologically, but like with the media, with everything, and how do you evolve from this? How do you get bigger than this? And I'm not excited to see it. I think we need to halt everything. I'm all for technological, you know, evolution. And
no, the internet was a bad idea. We should have never had the internet.
It's a turning point. Who was I talking to? I was talking to a buddy of mine a couple months ago, and he made the comparison that the internet is like the wheel or fire. Like once you invent it, there's no turning back.
The wheel is good. The fire is also good.
So it might be the opposite of that. Like it might – okay, the nuclear bomb. So it's nuclear – it's the internet.
No, the internet is a nuclear bomb for society. Like you're not wrong there.
It's where we're at. So again, AI, what's going to happen? In 50 years, 30 years, when we're in our you know, 50s or 70s, what's the world going to be like? I don't know. I'm scared.
Did you see the report that speaking of the internet, the Amazon Echo – the Amazon, whatever it is, Echo, Alexa,
Amazon Echo too.
Right. Will accidentally, in air quotes, accidentally start recording your voice up to 19 times a day.
Oh yeah.
Accidentally. Yeah. Like, and people bring these things into their homes.
Well, I think that's a separate thing. That's like the government overreach and the NSA, whatever they call it. But like, I saw a picture of Mark Zuckerberg. He has his Mac, his laptop, and he has a little post-it note over the camera. If Mark Zuckerberg's doing that, maybe we should all take the hint and not let the government into our homes. And that's kind of what happens. Not to get, you know, political, but you know, if you know the Edward Snowden story, it's scary. It's very scary. And I think the issue is like, who has the power here? Who's going to be the people who control this stuff? And for me, it's not so much the spying, you know, because at the end of the day, whatever, it's a big deal, but there's bigger fish to fry. For me, it's the artificial intelligence angle, and that's going to lead to our doomsday. If it's not to bring it full circle, if it's not a virus that comes out via melting ice caps. So we'll see.
I saw something that said 40-70% of the world population could end up with coronavirus. Not necessarily showing symptoms, but 40-70% of the world population could be affected. That's a horror movie.
I don't buy it.
That's a horror movie. So you're out on coronavirus.
I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think it's so overblown. And
you don't
and
think it's that big of a deal here, or you don't think it's that big of a deal in general?
I think that this happens every once in a while, and it's going to continue happening every once in a while. And this one is not the worst that we've ever had. It's just the newest one that we have. And people are you know, there's going to be hysteria surrounding it. But it's not even close to the biggest killer in the world. There's, like, way more dangerous stuff out there than the coronavirus. But since this is the, you know, the hot topic, it's being treated as the doomsday illness. And I don't think that's necessarily accurate.
I'm not in my normal level. Like, I'm a little more concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not racing out to buy rations, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. No, there's no bread and milk.
If this means people are more diligent washing their hands, that's a good thing, probably.
That's another funny part about this. People are like, make sure you wash your hands when you go to the bathroom, as if beforehand
We all know that that's like a 50-50 thing. I think the idea is now it's like, okay, now you actually have to do it, right? It's like, you know, when you're in the backseat of a car and they tell you to buckle up, it's like, yeah, all right, I hear you. But then when you're in the front seat, it's like, all right, yeah, I got to buckle up. Like, we're in the front seat of the car now. Okay, that's where we're at.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, I mean, look, like, the people who are out there, everybody's like, oh, like, public surfaces are contaminated. If you're out there, you know, licking picnic tables in city parks, you weren't going to live that long to begin with. That's called Darwinism.
Or maybe you were building up your immune system. It's like that episode of The Office where Jim sneezes on Dwight's toast so that he builds up his immune system. Maybe those people are the smart ones.
Okay, maybe they weren't going to die from disease. But again, if you're licking subway seats, you weren't going to live that long anyway.
Yeah, you probably got some issues.
I just believe that. So, again, I'm not over the top worried, but it's something to talk about. So there you go. All right. I want to keep a show under 45 minutes for once. It's been a while. So real quick, because, again, I feel bad that we never talk about Celtics or Bruins. It's just tough because, you know, they play one game and the narrative changes and we only do this show once a week. So, like, we could have talked about the Bruins and the Celtics today, but they're both playing tonight. So by the time you listen to this, it's probably already old. So I'll just say Jason Tatum, this actually came through when we started recording, was named Eastern Conference Player of the Month. Well, LeBron James is the West. So that's pretty damn cool to see his name next to LeBron. And with the Bruins, it's nice to see David Pastrnak scoring goals again. Imagine, like, the fact that we have Jason Tatum and David Pastrnak in the same city. And we could have had Mookie Betts too, but I won't go down that road. The fact we have those two guys is pretty cool. And we'll do more of them in the playoffs. I don't want people to think that we don't care. We do. It's just this format doesn't really fit discussing those teams the way the season is structured. But Jason Tatum, I do want to mention that. I mean, he's turning into a superstar. This is it. This is the turn. This is what we all wanted when Pearson Garnett got traded all those years ago. He is a bona fide elite. Top of the league, can carry a team to a championship superstar. If he's not there, he's on his way. He's getting very close. He's taking the steps, and that's awesome.
And I think this is also the past 4 years has kind of done away with the opinion that Danny Ainge is not a good drafter. And I understand he had a lot of high picks, but Marcus Smart was a hit. Jaylen Brown, in my opinion, has been a hit, and Jason Tatum has been a hit. And you could even say Terry Rozier at 15 was a hit.
No, Terry Rozier sucked. He had half a month. But I'll say this. his bust, Rozier and Olynyk, besides that, people talked about it being a bad drafter. Your argument saying, oh, you can't say he had a good draft because he was always picking at the top. He was always picking at the bottom before that. So the two play off each other, like, you know, yes, you have more options when you pick at the top. But swinging the first pick for the third pick, knowing you'd still get Tatum and picking up the extra first, that's brilliant. That's being a brilliant drafter. I agree with you 100%. I think nobody's going to tell you anymore that Danny Ainge can't draft, nor should they.
Yeah, absolutely. Danny Ainge is the guy. Outside of Belichick, it's really astounding what he's done, you know, at the helm.
He's been pretty good, too.
What was that?
Sweeney's been pretty good, too.
Sweeney's been very good. Sweeney's been great. But I also, there's a core there. And the Bruins, no one thought they were going to have a season like they're having right now, coming off of that Stanley Cup run. The only reason, in my opinion, that they're really in contention and they might be the favorites in the Eastern Conference is because David Pastrnak has developed, much like Jason Tatum has taken a step up this year. And it's always fun to see marketable, good athletes who are likable on top of it succeed. And I think the future is bright for both of those teams.
We'll have this conversation another time. Now's not the time. I think this is something we save for June, and the Red Sox are 10 games under 500. We need something to talk about. Jason Tatum, David Pastrnak. We need to kind of discuss the rise those two have had, but they're in the middle of it. I don't want to discuss it until we have the full picture. So we'll do that down the road. We have plenty of shows to go before then, hopefully. But yep. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Calling the Podcast. See everything online at clnsmedia.com. We're getting... next show might be the last one where Tom Brady's a free agent, Lebowitz, or where Tom Brady's a Patriot.
Yeah, it's scary. I'm kind of excited though, because it's the type of thing where people just keep talking about it and keep talking about it, and you just want action.
All right, we'll talk NFL free agency next time. Until then, he's Alex Lebowitz. I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.